close. And I just...
Brian, you get... Laura and company, everybody get you started? Okay. We are recording, everyone, just be aware. Good evening. I ask that we all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance. United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith. Ms. Quiatek.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leone.
Presenta.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Councilwoman Ramsey Smith will not be joining us this evening. Moving on to citations, we do have one citation for recent city retiree Fred Davis. I do not believe Fred is here. I believe I'm correct. So we will make sure Mr. Davis gets his citation in the mail. Before we go through our regular agenda items, City Council is going to conduct a public hearing this evening. Tonight's public hearing will be related to significant proposed amendments to the city's subdivision and land development ordinance, commonly known as, and you will hear referred to as, SALDO. The public hearing is for informational purposes only. There will be no votes taken during the public hearing. In connection with this public hearing, there are two communications. Mr. Miller, please read communication 6A as well as 6B.
A July 10th, 2025 memorandum and proposed ordinance from Craig Pfeiffer, Assistant Director of Planning and Zoning, advising that the Bethlehem Planning Commission voted 4-0 on April 10th in favor of recommending to City Council the adoption of the updated subdivision and land development ordinance, which is the subject of the public hearing tonight. 6B, a June 24th, 2025 correspondence from Jillian Seitz, Chief Community Planner with the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, offering a staff review of the draft amended SALDO. In summary, the letter states, quote, overall, the city's updated subdivision and land ordinance is clear, concise, and supports current day best practices for regulating subdivision and land development design and submission processes, unquote.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Public hearing is called to order. I will recognize a member of the administration to discuss the proposed revisions to the SALDO.
Hi, good evening. I am just going to start us off, but you'll probably hear from me the least this evening. I'm joined by our planning director, Kathy Fletcher, our assistant planning director, Craig Pfeiffer, and assistant city solicitor, Matt Deschler. As noted, we are presenting a few revisions and updates to the subdivision and land development ordinance, which we will refer to as the SALDO. And I just wanted to start, before passing it over to the professionals, with some sort of just level setting and reminding everybody a little bit about the basics of land development and where the SALDO fits into all of that. Because as we've talked about in many other contexts with different projects, you know, we know that there's a lot of different ordinances that govern the land development process. So, well, you know, when thinking about what it is that we're talking about tonight, I thought it would be helpful to just kind of set out what are the different ordinances that govern what we do in the city with respect to land development. The ones you're most familiar with probably are the zoning ordinance and the historic ordinances, and then the SALDO is the third piece that really rounds out the whole picture. So the zoning ordinance, you know, in summary, this is just a summary, this is not an official definition, but the zoning ordinance, you know, in our view, really governs how you can use your property and what and how you can build. And that is a lot of what we end up talking about in this room and end up talking about in public conversations when there's new development proposed. And a lot of that is really governed by the zoning ordinance. The SALDO kind of carves out a different space. The SALDO describes the processes that you have to follow when you're going through the land development process. And then it talks about how your building that you're proposing fits in with the bigger picture. And that includes, well, there's some examples here in the packet, but that includes things like how a project impacts the streets, how it impacts stormwater, you know, what the traffic effects are. Those are the sorts of things that are covered in the SALDO. And then for some specific areas in the city, as you know, we also have historic ordinances, and as authorized by state statute. In those areas, we are able to look at, you are able to look at, when issuing a certificate of appropriateness, things like architectural elements, materials, cover, color of facades, and things like that. And that's really the only place that you'll see those sorts of questions answered in land development. Neither the SALDO nor the zoning ordinance can dictate what color a building is, for example. So that's sort of the full picture. The SALDO itself is controlled by the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code, and that defines the ways that municipalities can regulate certain aspects of development. That's what you'll see in the SALDO. And it further establishes limits on the ways that zoning and SALDO provisions can be used and requires that certain procedures and processes are followed. So then I just put a few examples, which I've already sort of talked about, but what the SALDO does cover and what it does not cover. In terms of the land development process, a few examples. You know, it might have different requirements for sketch plan or full plan sets that come through the planning office. It defines the planning commission role. It puts out, for example, subdivision submission requirements, or it covers how deeds are, or how plans are recorded, for example. And then on that wider picture of development piece, as I mentioned, you know, if a project requires new streets, that sort of the design of the new streets is covered by the SALDO. There are provisions related to sidewalks and street trees and lighting and stormwater management and those sorts of elements. Things that the SALDO does not cover, the use of land, as in like residential or commercial uses on a particular piece of land, the types of buildings, that's not covered by the SALDO, whether it's a single family or a multifamily, that would be also a zoning provision. Density, how many units are on different parcels, building heights, all of those are zoning elements. And then, as I mentioned, building design, facades, materials, et cetera, all of that is not covered by a SALDO. And finally, I've talked about this in various places before, but there's just a little graphic in that packet that sort of describes the flow of a project. You know, a developer comes in with a project plan, you know, the first stops, you know, they might have a sketch plan, but the first stops are really first, does the project require zoning relief? So for all of those elements that I mentioned that are not part of the SALDO but that are in zoning, if there are aspects of a project that are not compliant with zoning, the first stop is likely going to be the zoning hearing board to request variances or special exceptions, or in some cases, as you've seen, taking an alternative route for a zoning text or zoning map amendment and coming directly to you. But that all happens at the zoning hearing board and is only specific to zoning ordinances. Again, if a project comes in and is in a historic district, that will go through the HCC or the HARB and then to city council. And then after those kind of pieces are addressed, you know, the SALDO really covers the pieces that you see on the chart here, the city staff review and third party review. Third party might be, for example, LANTA or the EAC. You'll see that there are letters from those organizations about different elements of a land development. And city staff, that includes not just the Planning Bureau, but you know, we send all projects out to engineering and fire and you know, water and sewer, all these different departments who are, you know, using the SALDO to look at a particular project. We provide comment review letters to these plans that come in, and that's where those SALDO provisions are coming in. And ultimately, the goal would be to get a project to a clean review letter, and that will go to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission from there will make recommendations related to all of those pieces that I discussed, trees, stormwater, etc. So that's a broad overview of sort of the process, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Fletcher to talk a little bit about our SALDO and these revisions specifically.
Thank you. So moving into the SALDO in Bethlehem, it was initially adopted in 1975. There's been minor changes since then, but there hasn't been any comprehensive update. And what you're seeing today is really a multi-year effort between all of the departments involved in the SALDO review. And it's also been reviewed by LANTA as well as the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council. It's been discussed at multiple Planning Commission meetings starting in October 2021 and as recently as April 2025, which then brought us to today, where it was communicated to Council in April, The draft document was officially transmitted at the end of June. Today is the public hearing. There is no vote today. There will eventually be two votes to be determined at a later date. So moving into the goals for this comprehensive update, we really wanted it to reflect the current SALDO standards per the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code. So things like the process for reporting plans or what is required for different types of submissions. We also wanted it to align with more recent documents that came out, you know, after 1975, such as our comprehensive plan, climate action plan, which is a major focus that we'll go into a little bit further later, as well as the current zoning ordinance. So for example, some things that have changed that are in line with the climate action plan include that all traffic impact studies must include nearby transit, routes and bus stops, as well as if there are street trees, they're subject to approval by the city forester. It also clarifies and simplifies procedures, which makes development simpler to understand. So for example, for a lot merger, the deed can be provided rather than a full subdivision plan. So it just changes those processes. And then lastly, it formally includes LANTA and the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council in the plan review process so that we're able to hear their notes on these different proposals as well. And I will hand it off to go into more detail.
Thank you. So in your binders on the left-hand side are a couple additional documents. And this is what we'll use as we go through to try to simplify this document and focus in on some of the key changes. The SALDO, when it was drafted and created, does take into consideration what was developed in 75 for those items that haven't changed and are still applicable from the MPC. Then we'll talk about some of the items, skip over those and talk more about the items that we've added. So the first document you have is just the transmittal letter that I just want to highlight that the Planning Commission did send along a favorable recommendation to adopt the document with a 4-0 vote. The next two documents are a summary of the key items as well as a comparison between the Climate Action Plan and the new SALDO. These are the two documents we'll use ostensibly to summarize the changes. And lastly is the LBPC letter with their recommendations for approval. This is a 102-page document. We're not going to read all 102 pages, but that certainly can be afforded to you if you'd like. We're going to start out with the memo. And I may reiterate some of the things that I wanted to highlight from Kathy and from Laura. But there were five major changes to this document. One, Climate Action Plan, we'll get into that extensively. LANTA and the EAC formal inclusion, a streamline and further explanation for procedures for submissions for both major and minor land developments and subdivisions. As Kathy mentioned earlier, a simplified process for lot consolidation, and perhaps most significant are the design standards for site layout. On page 8, we'll just start there with the modifications, waivers, and deferrals, and specifically just the deferrals for curb and sidewalk, reductions in street widths, or alternatives that reduce impervious coverage are listed in here. There are a couple of items that we'll talk about what the applicant has to do to show the city why they are requesting that deferral and why it should be considered, and then that the Planning Commission is the ultimate body that would grant that deferral. Jumping ahead to section 1342, this is the definition section, and I specifically just point to 18 and 19. Pages 18 and 19 talk about what is the definition of land development, that includes groups of two or more residential or non-residential buildings, subdivision of land, what is excluded from land development, for example, some conversions that don't include more than two dwelling units, and accessory buildings. Major land developments. This is a fun way of doing this. Major land developments are anything that involves 15,000 square feet or more of new impervious, 10 or more dwelling units, or the extension of a public street. Minor is anything less than that. Jumping ahead to page 23, this talks about subdivision. Again, it gives the definition of subdivision, and it talks about the difference between a major and minor. It flips it from the way we did land development. A minor subdivision is anything 500 dwelling units less, not involving the construction of a street or new utility main. And if it involves two or more acres, it does become a major subdivision. A major subdivision is anything greater than what was just read. Moving ahead to 1345, this talks about preliminary and final land development, or land development and major subdivisions. We start with page 27. And actually, I jumped ahead of myself a little bit there. I bring your attention to page 27 because it's a nice graphic and talks about land development, subdivision, major, minor, and what's recommended and what is required. On page 32, we get into the procedure aspect. This gets really detailed, but there is a checklist that is handed out to every person interested in doing a subdivision land development, and they typically their engineers will go through that checklist and make sure that they are provided what needs to be provided. Something I thought of interest, page 36 does talk about the ability to phase projects and what that process would entail. For 1346, we get into the procedures for minor subdivisions and minor land developments, and specifically lot line adjustments, lot consolidations, and as Kathy mentioned, the new requirement, or lack of requirement, where you don't have to do the subdivision plan formally. In lieu of that, you can provide to us a deed that would indicate what the new meets and bounds of those consolidated parcels would be. That'll help save time and money for those who want to consolidate their parcels. Moving ahead to 1348, this is on page 48. This is where we start to talk about recording of plans. This is stuff that's picked right up out of the MPC, so what you read in the MPC is what is reflected in our own new saldo. Just one thing to point out, some of the things that are typical in here in our review letters, it's something Laura had mentioned, under 1348.04, this is lifted right out of our engineer's office and the requirements for record plans and CAD files so that we have that stuff in perpetuity in our folders. On 1349, this is probably the bulk of what we'll talk about tonight. This is really where we start to incorporate the many strategies from the Climate Action Plan. It begins on page 50, but we'll jump ahead to page 52. Page 52, we'll talk about private streets. Really not climate action, but that all private streets are now required to be built to city standards. Therefore, if they are ever accepted over by the city, we don't have to go through any kind of reconstruction process. Moving ahead to page 54, access management. This is more of a safety. Wherever there is a subdivision or land development which contains an existing or proposed arterial or collector, the city shall require the ability to minimize the number and length of driveways, the ability to restrict ingress and egress involving left-hand turns, the prohibition on driveways from individual dwellings entering directly onto arterial streets, and the construction of rear streets to link driveways or link parking so that if there is one point of access on a major street, we're not having multiple ingress egress for each individual lot and use. Moving ahead to page 62, we'll start getting into climate action here. At the top of that page, number 14, bicycling. All new and widened streets should be designed to consider bicycle traffic. Porous surfaces, these are ones that allow stormwater to percolate through the surface to allow infiltration. These are encouraged in lieu of solid surface and redirecting stormwater to inlets. In coordination with LANTA, transit bus shelters shall be incorporated in all landscape designs. Jump a little bit off of CAP items, required transportation improvements. New streets bordering a subdivision or land development are coordinated for widths, grades, and in such locations as deemed necessary to accommodate all different types of traffic and uses, be it vehicular, pedestrian, or bicycle. Jumping over page 63, at the top on item number one, I thought this was also of interest, where state-owned streets are, if PennDOT does not want to accept the right-of-way, if the city chooses not to accept the right-of-way, the record plan shall state that the right-of-way shall be reserved for future dedication if deemed needed. Another climate action item, pedestrian and bicycle improvements and transit improvements shall incorporate the ability to increase walkability. Under funding, I also thought this to be of interest that in place of completing a required street improvement as a condition of final approval, an applicant may enter into a legally binding development agreement with the city for the applicant to fund the improvements or his or her fair share of such improvement as determined by the Planning Commission. So this is a payment in lieu of. Next page over on 64, we talk about the traffic impact studies. There's essentially three different types depending on the amount of daily trips during peak hour. The purpose here, implement recommendations of a Vision Zero climate action and complete streets policies and programs. So that is now incorporated directly into our traffic impact studies. There is some examples I want to talk about to promote construction transportation infrastructure which accommodates the pedestrian and the bicycle mass transit. Again, it's that whole complete street concept, and I'll get into some graphics that we have later on in the document. Under full studies, two items. The study shall consider nearby transit routes and stops and how those can be incorporated into the development. For any traffic impact study that involves more than 100 new trips per day, mass transit access to the site, such as provisions for a bus stop and shelter, shall be considered. And where a proposed development is adjacent to or near an existing or proposed lancha route, the city may require that a subdivision or land development include provisions for mass transit or paratransit access to the site in the consultation with lancha. Jumping ahead to another favorite of the Planning Commission on page 75 is green stormwater design. Here within street rights-of-way opportunities shall be considered to incorporate planting and infiltration areas in coordination with the layout and design of utilities, sidewalks, and streets. Where practical, porous paving materials should be considered between the curb and the sidewalk. Jumping over to page 76. Rain gardens and bioswales should be installed and planted to promote the infiltration and filtering of pollutants from the rainwater. Consideration should be given to directing stormwater from roof downspouts to suitable vegetated areas. There's under item six, methods suggesting the capture of stormwater runoff for later use for irrigation of landscaping. And then we also reference the Pennsylvania Stormwater Best Management Practices Manual. This is more about how stormwater detention ponds are developed and what their final look is. And more specifically in there, it references not just putting in a lawn, but using native species that would promote insects and help with filtration, better filtration. So jumping ahead, or jumping back to some of the safety items that we talked about, and this references back to that traffic impact study. On page 80 at the top, it gives you a graphic of what a bump out, or sometimes they're called neck downs, would look like. This improves safety in that it reduces the pedestrian's travel distance from one part of the intersection to the next. It also helps in slowing traffic whenever you have a pinch movement within the street. It does force people to slow down naturally. Under sticking with that, under sidewalks and pathways and driveway aprons, here we require that sidewalks with curbs built to city specifications shall be required along each side of all new, widened, or extended streets. This not only helps with pedestrian safety, but it also helps with stormwater management. Moving down to Part B, pathway and bikeway, if deemed necessary for the convenient and safe circulation of bicycles and pedestrians, the Planning Commission shall require that a subdivision or land development include the construction of a pathway or bikeway. So on page 82, there's extensive items on landscaping. I'm just going to highlight, these include everything from street trees, which are required along both sides of any street, and what oftentimes we'll find happen is where they're missing, and a new development is proposed. Even though they weren't there with the previous development, we now require them with the new development, and all street trees shall be approved by the city forester using the approved street tree list. The Saldo itself requires additional landscaping in section 1349, in above what would normally be required for buffer yards or foundation plantings. It emphasizes what I mentioned earlier, the variety of native species, particularly in buffer yards, so we don't have just a row of green giants, but a multitude of different species to help create some visual interest and a better screen overall. And green roofs, green roofs are also referenced in our zoning ordinance. I've been fortunate enough to see one developed here in the city. I'd love to see more developed here in the city. And lastly, another big item from our old ordinance to our new ordinance, we had at one point lifted out some design requirements of our zoning ordinance and moved them into the Saldo. And those are specific to site layout and design standards in our CL, or Limited Commercial, CB, Central Business District, RT, which is our high density, IRR, which is our industrial redevelopment, and our OMU, which is our office mixed use development. And I'll just highlight a few of those. Surface and off-street parking should be considered behind buildings, and principal buildings should be pushed to the front of the street. That parking lot lights should be reduced in height to 20 feet, include all of the typical cutoffs and anti-glare and spill provisions. That new buildings over 150 feet, the urban designer me loves this one, shall include variations in roof lines, overhangs, architectural details, setbacks, colors, materials, and canopies, porches, and awnings to create visual interest and break up that sometimes monotonous street wall. Applicants for new principal buildings will be required to submit architectural plans or elevations for the front facades and descriptions of the proposed materials. Pedestrian crosswalks, on particularly along arterials, shall include a variety of pavers, patterned concrete, or stamped textured asphalt. That main pedestrian entrances shall face streets. And lastly, that one-story buildings should be avoided where an existing block contains two stories or higher structures. So that's a very quick overview of what is about 3 years of a lot of work from the Planning Bureau, the 8 different review stops that we have here in the city whenever we have a land development subdivision, the EAC, the LANTA, and the Planning Commission. So with that, I will take any questions that you might have.
Thank you for the presentation. I will open it up to members of council for question or comment. I'll start with Councilwoman Wilhelm then and work our way down.
Thank you for the presentation. And thank you to all involved. This, as the title suggests, is quite a comprehensive undertaking. And I think additionally representative of our city's very forward-thinking values. I really appreciate the work. I was wondering if you could say a little bit with regard to the EAC, how would you describe their current involvement in this process, and what do we anticipate, you know, in terms of a deepening involvement? How do we anticipate that looking?
Certainly. So the Saldo now formalizes their review. Right now, it's just a request on our part made to the EAC and to LANTA as well. The EAC does provide, every time we have a land development, we submit the plans to them for their review. They submit usually a 2-page letter back to us. Their letter does have some common items that they'll typically suggest. Sheltered bicycle parking, the use of the C-PACE program for solar, which allows the developer to take that cost off of the initial upfront to investigate whether solar would be a good use at their project. It will also include common sense stormwater management, items like I mentioned in the best management practices handbook, and they'll also refer to landscaping and the use of native species for encouraging pollinators, things of that nature.
So it sounds like it's really more of a continued relationship, but in a more formalized fashion.
Correct.
You may not know the answer to this, and I understand if that's the case. I know that the EAC had been doing some research on EV stations outside of sort of public garage settings. I was just curious as to whether there's been progress made in that realm, or are we still working on that?
Sure. So there's two ways to answer that. I'll answer the first, and then maybe Kathy or Laura can answer the second part a little bit better than I can. So the EAC does also always use EV charging in every one of their letters and recommends that at least two stations be used, and that ideally, if possible, solar panels are used to charge those stations. And if the developer chooses not to install the stations up front, they at least provide the infrastructure so that the stations could be installed easily in the future. The second part of your question is greater EV use throughout the city. I knew that at one point we were looking at trying to find places randomly throughout the city that would make sense for EV charging. I was not involved in that project going forward, so I would turn to Kathy or Laura to further discuss that.
Thank you.
I actually think with the hiring of a new sustainability coordinator out of Public Works, I think that EAC has been working pretty closely with that person on the EV piece and the research.
I appreciate it. It's ongoing.
Yes. Yeah,
understood. Yeah. With regards to
considering as well changes, in funding opportunities.
Sure.
In recent months.
Right. Right. Do we anticipate, I expect there's a lot of enforcement required, or additional enforcement required, throughout these ordinance changes. Are there needs? Will we require additional staff, or can enforcement of these sort of deepened policies be handled within departments as is?
So when you say enforcement, maybe the word I would use would just be follow up to ensure that whatever is the approved plan is actually what is constructed.
Tomato.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a group of, out of those eight review stops, each one of us will go out and review what has been finished. There is a requirement of a progressive inspection program. So the developer, anytime they want a reduction in their letter of credit, contacts us and says, I've now completed 25% of the work, 50%, so on and so forth. And we'll go out and ensure that that stuff has been done. That's inherent in the process now. And I'm fortunate to have those other folks so that I'm not the only one going out and doing all this work. So the example would be the city forester goes out and counts the street trees and the parking lot trees and make sure the percentage of landscaping has been installed. The city engineer will make sure that the parking lot has been striped properly, signed properly. The building code, who's not one of our eight review stops, also does some of this work at the end of the project as well.
Okay, so it falls pretty nicely into the existing structures,
yes.
What I understand.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll just add that, sort of in response to a few of your questions here, what you're noticing is that we've already been doing a lot of the work that's reflected in these changes. As I think Ms. Fletcher noted, there hasn't been a comprehensive update to our Saldo since 1975, I believe, is the year. But in that time, we have been progressing in our processes. We've also been having climate considerations. Like, there's a lot that we have been doing that just hasn't been properly memorialized. So while there are seemingly major changes, they're actually not really in practice major changes because we've been doing so much of this work. We're just memorializing it because we've finally done the work of pulling it all together and bringing it comprehensively. And you've seen we've done the same thing with our zoning ordinance, for example. Like, we might, as projects come along, identify inconsistencies or some holes. And we don't come to you every single time we identify one of those things. We kind of collect it all and do it as a package. And that's what you're seeing here as well.
Understood. I appreciate that distinction. It's a reflection of what we do, not just of what we intend to do. Last question, with regard to the payment in lieu, that applies only to street improvements?
So there's one other area that does offer a payment in lieu of, and that's where the city forester makes a determination that required landscaping cannot be installed, and that a payment can be provided in lieu of installing that landscaping. Typically, it's a street tree, and then that dollar value that's collected is then used to plant trees in other locations in the city.
Got it. Thank you. I appreciate your answers.
Thank you. Councilwoman Lawyer.
Yeah. Also, thank you for the presentation and the extensive work. And, you know, to everyone who this is your professional job, thank you. But also, especially when we talk about the EAC, we're talking about volunteers who are putting a lot of time and effort and expertise into this. So extra thank you for them for volunteering to take on such work. Few questions I had. One, you mentioned that every landscape design or every streetscape design should have bus shelter included in the design. I am assuming that's only when there is a bus route there, or there would be review, like you said, for 100 trips, right?
Correct. So I believe the language is, you know, where applicable or where it makes sense,
okay.
My language, not the language of the ordinance, that it should be considered. In addition, it's required that we coordinate with land time. So we don't want to arbitrarily put a bus station in a place that goes zipping past.
Got it. For the street improvements funding in lieu of, is there any benchmark based on other communities that have similar clauses in their similar ordinances about how much work that shifts, like how often is that taken advantage of? I'm thinking our streets crew is already at capacity, right? They're you know, increasing their capacity and a lot, and they're doing great work, but we already know that we can't get to every street that we want to every year. So I'm a little bit concerned that if a developer would say, oh, I'm just going to pay for it, like, sure, we might be able to hire somebody, but what would the logistics of that kind of shake out to?
Sure. So two answers to that. The first one is that any such proposal has to go through our Public Works Division Department, as well as our Engineering Bureau, which includes our traffic superintendent. So those folks would have to be acceptable, amenable to that request, and then the reason being is they would then know if our street crews would be able to do that implementation. So we don't want to accept funding if our crews can't do the implementation. The second part about if other municipalities are doing it, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe Mike or Laura might have a little bit of insight on that, but I don't personally.
Okay. And so we would essentially have the right of first refusal if they would say, or right of refusal, if they would say, we'd like you to do this, we could say, no, the city cannot take this on, and then the developer would be required to do that street improvement.
We have one such example right now over by the SGO, is where the developer is going to do the street improvements.
Okay. All right. And then for the stormwater, I'm really grateful to see so much focus on environmental initiatives and the climate action plan included in here. I'm also aware that we recently started implementing a stormwater fee. And so if we are simultaneously implementing higher fees and trying to reduce the amount of stormwater, which will take time for us to see the actuality of that, but would developers that take efforts to put in swales or rain gardens or things like that to reduce the amount of strain on the system, would they be incentivized in any way to do that through reduction or alteration of those fees?
Yeah, that's a great question. The ordinance falls under Public Works and Engineering specific, so I'm not as familiar with it. I can tell you that fee is based on a square footage of increased impervious coverage, and that's multiplied by 10% or 10 cents. So it is a fee, but it's also a one-time fee that we add into our land development. Now there's another fee in terms of stormwater, and perhaps Attorney Deschner is a little bit more familiar with the case law on this, can discuss in a little bit more detail than what I can.
We have a stormwater impact fee ordinance that does allow for ongoing payments based on their impervious coverage.
So theoretically, if someone's putting in a rain garden, to collect some of the drainage that wouldn't be considered impervious surface. So there would be a natural reduction in their fee. Or the fee would just not be as high. It wouldn't be a reduction.
If you're not covering that area of the land with impervious cover, then right. Yes, that would you would have less impervious cover, right. So there would be less of the ongoing fee.
Okay, that seems quite logical. Okay, that's all I have for now. I'm sure as I take a deeper dive into the 100 pages, I'll have more. But thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you. On page 86, and thank you for all of your work, everybody who's been involved in this process. It's something that we've certainly been hearing about since we came on 4 years ago. I know that there have been a few times along the way when we've done some work with Ms. Heller. So. On page 86, item F, that is, I believe you pointed that out as being new about submitting a set of preliminary sketches for elevation plans, right? So it mentions plans for the front facade, a description of proposed front facade materials, and that these materials may be offered to the planning commission and other boards for review and comment. So this isn't in any way, we were just talking about the fact that our historic conservation district and our historic preservation district, those are the only places where there's actual sort of the certificate of appropriateness for things like materials and facades and things like that. What exactly is the impact that the comments could have in the salvo process?
Yeah, great question. So this was taken out of the zoning ordinance back when the zoning ordinance had this in it. We did ask that request of developers. So we had it at one point, we stopped, and now when we bring this back online in the new SALDO, we'll have it again. That being said, we currently request that all developments come with elevation plans and facade materials, and developers have consistently given us that information. And then as part of our review letter, we'll comment as planning staff on the appropriateness of everything from the massing, the scale, the fenestration, window patterning, and door patterning, and whether a masonry facade is appropriate, or masonry details are appropriate, or a cementitious siding is more appropriate. Also down to like roof lines, things of that nature. And then the Planning Commission, to their credit, which also has now a retired architect until recently, as well as a civil engineer, and others that have been involved in development will always weigh in on those, and developers have always been receptive to those comments. So it brings a better product to the city.
Okay, so there's it's not like if they said no or didn't take the advice that that it could actually stop the process?
I joked about this earlier today. I wish we had the authority to do that. We do not. So if a developer says, I'm not going to put thin brick on this building, there's nothing that requires them to do that.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? I'll start with Councilwoman Leo and then go back to Councilwoman Laird.
I had a question about the sketch plan review procedure. So I was looking at the old SALDO and the new one. So this specific section, 1344.03A, no official action shall be taken on a sketch plan. Is that a new sentence itself? I didn't see that in the old SALDO, but is that just the general, that's always been the case, no action is taken on a sketch plan?
So sketch plans, the current SALDO, I sum up as you give us whatever you have and we'll respond to whatever you've provided to us. The Planning Commission typically will not take any action on a sketch plan. They only may take action, let me rephrase that. When they do take action, it's because it was either deemed to be a site plan review, which is required under the zoning ordinance, or there is a request for zoning relief, and then the Planning Commission may or may not send along a recommendation to the zoning hearing board. In my tenure, they've always avoided any kind of recommendation to the zoning hearing board, and they more look at sketch plan reviews as an opportunity for the developer to present to the city a project before it gets too far engineered and through the architecture process so that they can get some initial feedback. And perhaps as important, it gives the public a first opportunity to see a project or a plan before it goes through final, preliminary final land development.
All right, my second question has to do with consolidating parcels. You called it out a little bit. I haven't dug into that section yet. Does this change the process of consolidating parcels at all?
It simplifies it.
It simplifies it.
It simplifies it, yeah. So under the current SALDO, you would have to hire a civil engineer, prepare a plan that would be recorded, and that engineer would also have to prepare a new meets and bounds legal description of that new consolidated parcel. We've taken the formal plan part out of the process and just focused in on allowing the engineer to provide an overall meets and bounds description that can then be recorded.
Okay. And the only other thing I wanted to say was the visual interest on buildings over 150 feet. There's not a lot of buildings over 150 feet. There's not a lot of places for buildings over 150 feet other than the IRR. But visual interest on buildings over 150 feet is extremely important. We're let's get these like canyons of tall buildings. So putting that in and codifying it the way it is very, I think that is a very, very important step if we do start to see mass when it comes to building scale. Visual interest is important, so thank you for that.
Councilwoman Laird.
Yes, thought of two more questions. So another in lieu of example that you mentioned was the city forester could choose to require payment in lieu of something like a street tree if it was deemed to be not appropriate for the site. Would that apply also? I know there have been a couple of projects bubbling up recently where historical trees have been kind of contentious points. Would this allow the opportunity for developers to say, we'd like to pay not to avoid planting a tree, but to have the ability to build where it might damage a historic tree?
So I'll answer the question and then I'll give Attorney Deschler the opportunity because he's a little bit more versed in this than I am. Pennsylvania law allows a landowner to trim branches, to excavate next to their lot lines, and unfortunately there's nothing in the SALDO or the MPC that would prohibit that. I am certainly sensitive to legacy trees, and there's two projects currently before us where two legacy trees are being threatened. We encourage the developer to avoid any kind of disturbance in what's called the drip line. So if you think about the canopy of a tree and the water shedding straight off that canopy and down, that creates a big circle. We encourage them not to encroach upon that. We look for solutions where maybe the site can be readjusted so that the building or the parking lot would not affect that legacy tree. That is also something that the Planning Commission members are sensitive to and also look for solutions. In answer to your question, the payment in lieu of is for only three items: street trees, required landscaping like parking lot trees, and buffer trees, and any tree that was replaced or that had to be taken down as part of a redevelopment of the site. So if you had a wooded lot and you met the criteria of 20 trees, but you couldn't develop the site and replant those 20 trees, then that would also be a payment.
Okay, so it wouldn't be directly applicable, but that whole situation isn't quite directly applicable to this ordinance.
It's not.
Got it.
It becomes, unfortunately, it becomes a civil matter between the two property owners.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if the tree is outside the city's right-of-way, within the meets and bounds description of your property, you can cut down the tree.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of if the tree is on the property. I was thinking of the examples happening right now where it's near the property.
On someone else's property?
Mm-hmm.
I think my answer would be the same, that neighbor could cut down the tree. I mean, there might be a recorded plan, for example, where you need a certain number of trees on the property, they could have to replace it. But you know, in and of itself, you can't stop someone from chopping down a tree. They might be required to replace it, but they can chop down the tree.
And then my other additional question is if and when this is adopted, what would the process look like in terms of grandfathering? Like, where would the cutoff be for what plans would need to fall under this new saldo versus the existing one?
If there are land development plans that are submitted in advance of the final enactment of the ordinance, those plans get the benefit of the previous existing ordinance. I would say they also get the benefit of the post-enactment ordinance. In other words, you can't enact an ordinance that kind of takes away rights from the landowner as they existed before enacting the ordinance. But if for example, the ordinance would give that landowner additional rights or be more favorable to the landowner to some degree, they can take advantage of the new ordinance. So you can't make it worse, basically.
Okay. But it would be anything submitted, not just what is approved before it takes effect.
The plan would need to be filed before final enactment of the SALDO or a zoning change.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council?
I just have one follow-up question to Ms. Lair's question. When you're talking about a tree, do you mean just the visual portion of the tree, or is the root system considered? You said a tree in the city's right-of-way. Does that mean just the tree itself, or does that mean if the root system goes under the street, is that root system considered part of a tree in the city's right-of-way?
I'm not a tree guy. I would just say that in the right-of-way, because the city owns the right-of-way, so that's mm-hmm. why there's greater... the city has greater regulatory authority over the trees in the right-of-way.
But it would be the tree that we can physically see. It would be like the root system itself that's much wider than the tree. By that I mean, like, let's say there's a tree on, like, right next to a fence, and we're saying that the tree is not the city's business because it's on the fence, but it's right inside of the property line. But root system for trees are quite large. So the root system, it's underground, but it would be in the city's right-of-way because it would more than likely be running up under the city's street. So does that make it in the city's right-of-way and give the city ability to talk about the tree or just the visual portion of the tree, the trunk itself?
Well, I guess if the roots are running outside the right-of-way, it's similar if the branches overhead are running outside the right-of-way. I've seen this on occasion. You know, for example, if the tree's on your neighbor's property, but the branches extend onto your property across the line, it's actually a trespass. You actually have the right to cut the branches of the property line and bill your neighbor for the cost of doing so. So those kind of things can be trespasses, actually, that are remedied by civil actions, not necessarily the subdivision and land development process.
All right, thanks.
Anything else from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
No, I just want to thank all of you for all the work. It looks pretty extensive, so I don't want to thank you for all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I don't have any questions that weren't already answered. I just want to, I will one briefly thank everybody for the years of effort that went into it. But we know anything like this is always a heavy lift, like we talk about when we review other comprehensive updates to ordinances. And I do also just want to thank everybody for, as you went through the presentation and you pointed out places where the SALDO where processes were simplified or streamlined, but that's not sacrificing scrutiny as it relates to land development. And I just think that's an important thing to balance, right? We don't want to be too draconian on people as it relates to property rights and what they can do and all these processes that we want to put people through. But at the same time, as Ms. Collins had recognized, for years now we have been implementing things and now just everyone doing their part to bring it in one package in front of council, but while making revisions where we're appropriate to balance it out. So thank you. Anything else from members of council? All right, we will have public comment. This is exclusively for the public hearing. We did have one person sign up in advance. Pardon. Mr. Faber, do you want to make comment on the SALDO? I will ask everyone to still recognize our 5-minute time limit.
Hello, Harry Faber. And now I would like to apologize. My preparation naively assumed that this was an entirely new ordinance, and I recognize my lack of knowledge, dare I say ignorance, in regards to the overall scope, intent, or even legal restrictions of this ordinance. However, I still have some thoughts. To my knowledge, This ordinance does nothing to prevent rent hikes or evictions resulting from new developments. There are no community land trusts or rent control mechanisms included, leaving working class residents vulnerable to displacement. I find there to be pretty weak environmental protections for the working class neighborhoods, specifically green infrastructure incentives, as in 1349.08.C, are voluntary, meaning developers can ignore them to maximize profits at the expense of public health. I'm not a big fan of the privatization of public space. I also, I believe there's no requirement for community input beyond perfunctory public hearings, which are tend to be dominated by the developers and landlords. And some rebuttals that I might hear, I've kind of prepared a little bit as well. One, you know, the argument that strict regulations raise costs and hurt housing supply. I would argue that the real barrier to housing isn't regulation, it's profit. Developers sit on vacant land, flip properties, and build luxury units while working class families get priced out. We need non-market housing, built and controlled by the people, not speculators. Also, another developer argument would be we need to streamline approvals to speed up construction. And to that I would say, streamlining for whom? Fast-tracking approvals just means more loopholes for developers while bypassing community input. I believe we need democratic planning where workers and tenants decide what gets built, not backroom deals with capitalists. I know many people want progress now. I know many people want liberation now, and I do too. I also recognize the time it takes to build the right movement, to build class consciousness, to build the world we want to live in. But in my opinion, this ordinance is not a step towards liberation. I find it to barely be progress. It is the same old concessions to the capitalist ruling class. I acknowledge that I do not know, let alone understand, all the rules and regulations, statutes, and whatnot. But what I do know is that when a system, as Mayor Reynolds always discusses the systemic issues we are dealing with, when a system intentionally produces poverty, suffering, injustice, homelessness, joblessness, while also artificially preventing progress and prosperity for all, specifically the working class and those most marginalized, it is time for the system to be overthrown. The time is now more than ever before. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. That was the only person we had signed up to make comments. I'll go around the room. Again, this is just for the public hearing, which is the Saldo update. Anyone to the left want to make comment? Mr. Hackett?
May I make comments after it goes to the middle?
Mr. Hackett, I'm gonna go around the room. Would you like to make comment now about the Saldo, sir?
Can't make it on the way back.
Mr. Hackett, I customarily go around the room, so I just would like to keep progressing how I normally do.
I won't do better than you, but I promise. Hi, my name is Bud Hackett, and I am a Bethlehem resident for quite some time. I do not know, or I did not read the entire Saldo. I scanned it a little bit, but I do have a couple of points or questions to raise. One is, it wasn't clear to me, and it became increasingly clear as the gentleman spoke, but it wasn't clear to me what the changes were from the previous document. So correct me if I'm wrong, but as I looked at the document that was emailed to us, I couldn't tell what the changes are. So I didn't know what the changes were, I didn't know what the motivation for changes were, and I guess the most important thing I have to say is, I don't have a sense of what the impact of some of the changes are, and the impacts on what. Hopefully it makes it a much better city, but I don't know that. There seemed to be quite a bit of input from, I don't know, the eight stops or whatever you refer to it as. There was a lot of input for the government insiders. I naively was not aware that this document had been in progress for 3 years. Shame on me for that. I should know everything, but I don't. But I'm particularly concerned about having a better understanding of what the changes are, What has motivated the changes? I imagine that's policy items. The councilwoman talked about the progressive for our vision or something like that. So what's motivating and what the impacts are? Is this going to make things better, worse, more expensive, less expensive? I enjoyed Councilperson's Laird's comment on stormwater fees. One of the first times I've ever heard council say, we might get a reduction in a fee or revenue to the city. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and you can tell me later, or addressing the audience, when the opportunity would be for folks to ask those questions, get that review, understand the impacts of the proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hackett. I will remind everyone, council's not voting on anything this evening, so council will have two votes on the ordinance at upcoming council meetings, where there will be more opportunity for council to address the administration. Anyone else in the wide center? Is there anyone in the wide center who would like to make comment? Mr. Shire? Sir, I didn't see your hand. You'll be next, though, then, okay?
Bill Shire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. Well, let me start with page 86, since it was mentioned previously. And I hadn't gotten that far, but one sentence just jumped out at me tonight. Under paragraph D, David, second sentence, it says, blank walls without at least one, strikes me as humorous. Blank walls without at least one door and one window shall not face an arterial street. Thank God. Perhaps it could be strengthened a bit. Maybe two doors and two windows. That's my comment. Partly because I just got back from Wisconsin after spending 2 months there. I didn't get through as much of this as I would like. In fact, only the LVPC letter and the first 10 pages. And the letter from LVPC was obviously written by a lawyer. And even though I'm sometimes accused of being a lawyer, I still had to struggle to get through it. I think I understood it, and the comments seemed to be reasonable. I noticed in the media that our Planning Commission approved it, this ordinance unanimously. I'm wondering if they even had any amendments or even any comment. Quick story. When the zoning ordinance was completely revised about 12 years ago, and I was on the mayor's task force, our Planning Commission not only approved it unanimously, they did it without a single word of comment. I couldn't believe it. What on earth is going on in this city? Unfortunately, our boards and commissions aren't terribly involved. And that's too bad. We keep asking for volunteers. We need people. Maybe the reason people don't volunteer is because it's too difficult to accomplish anything. All right, to the ordinance itself. I have four comments so far. It's almost a comment a page. I hope to have more at the first council meeting. The first comment is on page 6 under purposes, and it says one of the purposes is safeguarding the interests of the public, the homeowner, the subdivider, the land developer, and the municipality. I would add one entity to that, and that would be the neighborhood. You could argue that the neighborhood could be included in the public, but there's an overlap between the public and the municipality, and the public is mentioned for emphasis, and I think it would be good to mention the neighborhood for emphasis as well. We have a zoning variance case on the west side right now at 312 Hanover, and I won't go into it, but the neighborhood is up in arms, and we'll see if that has any effect at all. Second comment is page 7, and this is has to do with the requirement for adoption. And one of the things that it says here, either of the following occurs, the required improvements have already been done, okay, or the city has been assured by means of a developer's agreement and guarantees acceptable to the city of Bethlehem that the improvements will subsequently be installed. I think we could use some stronger language there, like what happens if, or when is it determined that this has not been done? It seems like they're going a little easy on the developer here. And for example, what happens if it hasn't been done? Next comment is on standards. And where provisions, standards, or specifications of this ordinance conflict with those of any state statute, other ordinances, or regulations, the more restrictive requirements shall
apply. Mr. Shire, I'm going to ask you to be brief to wrap it up, please. I'll give you another couple seconds.
Oh, what a dichotomy here. What a dichotomy. Okay, I'll finish this with a second comment and save the other two for later. Regardless of the source, well, it seems to me you could have the source, Harry Faber and I could come up with some requirements and restrictions, and obviously that would not be acceptable. So that shouldn't be as broad as it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Sir?
Joe Poposky, running for city council. I'm going to be inspecting 3 rain gardens getting excavated tomorrow. I know what we're talking about here. A lot of what we have in this is awesome. It's really great, especially what they're doing with the stormwater. But while you look at this and vote on it, I urge you to look at each individual thing and ask if we need this. Do we really need this? Because everything you have on here is raising the cost of the development of the property, which is having an impact on our affordable housing crisis. And that's all I have to say. Look at each one. If we need it, put it in there. But if we don't, maybe we want to wait a little bit longer because it's going to drive up the cost of housing. And everybody sits here and says about developers making a profit. Developers are a company. Companies don't go in business without making a profit. If they don't make a profit, they don't build houses. And we don't have houses. So you have to keep that in mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else in the White Center who wants to make a comment? Mr. O'Hare.
Hello, Mike O'Hare from Bethlehem, 632 4th Avenue. Just a couple of things I wanted to say. One was about the process of what's going on here. I saw this ad in the Bethlehem Free Press, or the Bethlehem Press printed media, thank God for printed media, twice, you know, in 2 weeks about this hearing tonight. And I was a little surprised that I kind of pay attention to what's going on, but I'm sure a lot of people have no idea in the city that this is happening. I'm wondering if there's a city council liaison, if this is published maybe in the Bethlehem newsletters, if it's on the website, that kind of stuff is happening. I was a little surprised that this has been going on for years, and the first I really heard about it was 2 weeks ago. So I think that just speaks to maybe trying to make people more aware of the process of things that are happening in the city. Was there a city council liaison between the group that was working on this new ordinance versus what we see, you know, what we're being presented here tonight? Also, the difference between the old and the new saldo is it's like a totally different document. I looked at the old saldo and the new one, and they don't compare at all, and that's probably the way it is, but I was surprised at how different the document is. And also, the notice in the paper says, and Mr. Miller was kind enough to give me a 100-page copy of the ordinance, but it says come to City Hall to get the ordinance, to get a copy of the ordinance. It would have been probably better, more convenient for it to be on the website for people to look at it that way or download it if they want to. So maybe just, you know, thinking about that in the future. Now for the substance of the, two things on the substance. They're coupling the SALDO with the Climate Action Plan. And when you look at what we heard tonight was, so rain gardens, solar panel ready roofs, less impervious surfaces, bus shelters, bicycle racks that are covered, landscaping, rain gardens, all those sorts of things. That's going to add cost to development. That developer is not going to absorb the cost. They're going to pass that cost on to the renter or the owner. And 2 weeks ago, we were here talking about the Community Development Block Grant, which deals a lot with affordable housing issues, with the poor sections of the city. My concern is when you add all of these climate action plan goals into this ordinance, it's going to raise the cost, it's going to create less affordable housing, and people are going to suffer more as a consequence of that. So I don't know if there, as somebody had mentioned this, if there's a incentive for the developer to, if they do certain things, they would be rebated, they would, you know, not be charged for maybe city fees, that kind of stuff. I think it might be an incentive, you know, an incentive to the developer to comply with these things. And again, my second point was, I think it's going to raise the cost of development, which is going to create more problems for affordable housing, and you might wind up with a homeless encampment in a rain garden somewhere. So thanks.
Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. Anyone else in the Wide Center who wants to make a comment on the SALDO? Yes, in the very back center.
Hello, my name is Francis Kuna. I have nothing prepared. It's very short. I just came to see what was going on in Bethlehem. Didn't know what you guys were discussing. But a major thing for me is affordable housing in Bethlehem. There is none of it. The development that keeps happening in this area pushes poor people out into different cities, onto the Greenway, everything else. You guys complaining about homelessness, this is what causes it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Curatola.
I have to say that most of the things that you recommend for affordable housing are right on target. But one thing you're not looking at, most developers, they wind up saying, we cannot build this project for anything less than, and they all stick together on this thing. One thing you should ask them, and make this official, how much are you paying for your products to make the thing, the development? Where are you getting them from? How much you paying for labor? This all goes into cost. Maybe they should get some of the homeless people to do some of the labor to build some of those developments that they can live in. That would bring the cost down. Maybe we should go ahead and find out across the board where in the United States they would get the products they need, the material they need for less. Not that they go ahead and get it from somebody who they know that they might get a kickback from. There's too much of this going on in our country. Those are the things you need to look at. The materials, how much you're paying for the materials, how much you're paying for labor. Those are two very important factors. And then the cost could go down and we could have affordable housing. God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Curatola. Is there anyone else in the room who has not had a chance to speak, wanted to make a comment on the SALDO? I see none. So I'll remind everyone, that the proposed ordinance will be placed on the City Council agenda for August 5th, and that will be for first of two readings. The public hearing is adjourned. So now we'll continue on to our normal City Council meeting. Approval of the minutes for the July 1st council meeting. Any comments on the July 1st Minutes? Seeing none, we'll move on to public comment for any subjects not being voted on this evening. We do have four people signed up, our first being, well, thank you again to everyone from the administration who came out to make the presentation, get home safe. And we'll continue on to public comment. Ms. Mary Toulouse is our first speaker this evening.
Yes, my name is Mary Toulouse. I live at 1528 West Market Street. And I'm here tonight representing the Mountaineer Neighborhood Association. And I would like to thank Council for its support and authorization for the 2025 Rose Garden Farmers Market. This is the ninth year of the market, and I'm pleased to report that it has really taken off. We have been averaging about 500 shoppers a week thus far, with a record high of 800. We've always had a strong social media presence, but this year we were also able to expand our visibility through on-site marketing. And thanks in large part to the city's support of this. After extensive research with PP&L, very extensive, we received approval to install four promotional banners on utility poles along 8th Avenue. We purchased, Mana purchased the flags and the hardware, and the city generously handled the installation. Additionally, some of our events have been posted on the city's website. Both of these examples have significantly boosted our outreach. Unfortunately, PP&L has informed us that they will only authorize the city, not individual organizations like us, to request pole use in the future. So we're hoping to be able to work with the city again for the 2026 market. We have seen an increase in vendor participation this year with a total of 30 tables, although some retail vendors are only half season and attend on alternating weeks. And just as an FYI, Mana provides support for several startups each year, be it by helping with vendor fees, finding affordable insurance, finding access to local licensed kitchens. This year, we also had a notable rise in applications from nonprofit groups, many of which have lost all of their federal funding. Joining us, for example, joining our community, our market community, for example, is one of our local women's shelters. Their members are now preparing and selling shish kebabs at the market to raise funds for their shelter. We also have welcomed a group that provides meaningful employment opportunities for children with special needs. These young vendors share their talents and sell unique products that they have made. Additionally, some of our vendors donate their surplus products to Essentials Cafe, a pay-what-you-can restaurant serving the Westside community. We do not charge any fees to our local nonprofits who work in the come to the market. One issue I do want to bring to your attention is the city's online vendor application. And I don't mean to offend anybody. I know all these things are hard work. But almost all of my vendors describe it as frustrating. I would actually quote them numerous times, having heard the word nightmare. And a few have decided not even to apply because of it. To be very clear on this issue, this is not a problem with the city staff. The administrators, event coordinator, tax and health people have been incredibly helpful and responsive. The problem is the app itself. The users, the vendors, they just want to apply for a permit. They don't want to learn a new program that they're not ever probably going to use again, or maybe once a year. I understand that the city is considering modifying or replacing the current program. I'll be sending along a short list of suggestions that I have noticed, but please understand, I would be very happy to contribute in any meaningful way, volunteer, to improving this application and application process. Web development is part of my professional responsibilities at Lafayette College, so I'm familiar, very familiar, with platforms and usability issues from both a user and design perspective. So thank you again for your support of the market. Please visit the market, shop with us, and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Toulouse. Next speaker is Mr. Caratola.
Hi, I'm Marty Caratola, 813 Loafer Street in Bethlehem on the south side. I like to say, here in the city, the main thing is to protect the citizens of our city of Bethlehem. If our civil rights are hindered by outside of the city, that's affecting the people in the city. We got to do what we can do to push the civil rights being properly activated all throughout outside our city as well for our citizens. Citizens go to Mayberry, New Jersey, RFD, in some little town that winds up getting police officers that don't respect the uniform that they have, like we do in Bethlehem. They don't respect it. All they do is look at it as a way to go ahead and be able to push, legally push other people around and take your civil rights away. The way that we can put enforcement on this thing is to make it that any police forces that use excessive force using police brutality, conditions unbecoming of a police officer, perjury, anything of that nature, their prospects of getting JAG grants, federal and state funds, will go down, depending how many complaints they had. Two, it may not be nothing. They might be on suspension upon getting those JAG grants. We gotta make this happen. Push the governor to push the other governors throughout the country so our citizens in Bethlehem are protected with our civil rights. I have my civil rights taken away from me. In Asbury, New Jersey, on my birthday, I was speaking and a police officer caught me totally off guard. I didn't expect it at all from a police officer. He wound up saying, when I said, as I was trying to talk, I said, let me sit down while I'm talking. Mr. Caratola, you're out of here. He grabbed me from behind, throws me towards the door. I wasn't even being abusive. I was talking nicely. He said, and besides that, you're under arrest. I said, what for? He said, now you're resisting arrest, because my hands were alongside. Grabs him behind my back, throws me against the wall, puts the cuffs on me, throws me outside against the guardrail, puts me against his patrol car. He said, spread your legs. We're taking you in. We got to go through your pockets. He goes through my pockets. I guess, of course, that probable cause doesn't matter on the streets. But the thing is, if probable cause should be if there's a reason for that. But there was no reason. If their videos are working in their lapels, all three officers, those videos should be working. When I go to the courtroom next week, if those videos aren't working, I'm going to be up. If they don't get thrown away, I wound up going, I was injured greatly from this. He actually put his whole weight, after he had the handcuffs on me, that punk put his whole weight to my back and messes up my side, gives me a hairline fracture. Now, where is that condition becoming of a police officer? We don't do that in Bethlehem. We should not expect that to be done to our citizens of Bethlehem in any place in New Jersey, in Kentucky, anywhere in our country. We should not tolerate this and go to our government to make it that they will not get their grants if they are using excessive force with police brutality, conditions unbecoming of a police officer, any things that are not proper for a police officer. We stand by for them. If they come to our city music fest, our police officers don't do what theirs would do. They should be doing the same. We need to push to our governors to go across the board throughout the whole United States. Police officers that are doing this stuff, they don't get their JAG grants properly. They'll get less money, and maybe no money from federal or state funds for whatever they're looking for with their police departments. That's basically what I have to say. But I was injured when I was just trying to go ahead and explain the situation, and another woman was injured for no reason at all. She lost her child through it, and she couldn't sue because they had it all worked out that they were right. We got to stand behind our citizens. God bless.
Thank you, Mr. Caracciola. Our next speaker is Mr. Will Weber.
Mark Will Weber, here to represent the direct, the citizen advocate for sewer and water issues. That's a lot of fire. I don't think I can match the fire, but I'm going to talk about water, you know, fire and water. Anyway, when I was here last, I think it was April, I did mention that without these devices that will allow the citizens to measure their water usage as they get these new smart meters put in, and I said, I guarantee you that somebody out there right now is accumulating a large water bill because they're not going to get their bill for three months, a quarter, where if they had the device, they would know within hours, presumably if they looked at it, or days, that something was wrong with their water. So sure enough, on our site, the drip, a woman reported that her residence was charged for 26,000 gallons of water for a quarter. She normally uses 5,000 or 6,000. So four times to basically what I use in a year. So it's a lot of water. Probably going to be $250-$300 penalty fine, which is totally unnecessary if they would come across and put these devices in, which is being done all around the country. So instead, these people are blindsided by one of these mega bills. And as I stand here again tonight, I'm telling you right now, it's happening again. People are accumulating these large water bills because these guys, either through indifference or ineptness, have not put in these devices. Now think about how unfair that has been, because they come into your house, they go, you gotta take this new smart meter. You can't refuse to take it. You have to take it. In fact, you can go to jail if you don't take it. Google Naperville, Illinois, 2013, two women who tried to refuse installation of a water meter, and they cuffed them and put the meter in while they were in jail. So anyway, yeah, and this could be done, and it's blatantly unfair. They come in, you got to take the meter. You have no choice on the model of the meter. Or the company of the meter, you got to take what they give you, and you're told that, well, maybe down the line we're going to give you the one thing that's good for the citizen that will allow them to not get fined like this. Now, Senator Boscola, back in, I think at the end of 24, wrote a nice op-ed about Big Electric and how the citizens are getting abused by Big Electric. Coincidentally, no mention about water, however. And I say to you, does it matter whether you're getting mauled by Big Electric or Big Water? It's like, you know, you get mauled by a tiger or a lion. What's the difference? And, you know, I don't know where we are in this, but it really has to be done. And it's being done all around the rest of the country. There's something out there called AquaHawk. Last time I mentioned Eyes on Water. AquaHawk is being put in, and it's already in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Morgantown, West Virginia, Appleton, Wisconsin, San Luis Obispo, California, and it allows the citizen to measure their water consumption by the hour. Now, I don't know whether we're ever going to get there. My smart meter's been in for almost a year and a half, but I've heard nothing about this device that would protect me or protect these people that just happened to. So when does a citizen get something good done? You know, the director's still making his six-figure salary, and they're collecting all this revenue from these smart meters, but yet we don't have a protective device yet. And no mention when we will. And I don't know if we will, because when it was brought up originally, he right away said, well, we'll do it for businesses. But he danced around whether or not he would do it for the private citizen. Fred Astaire would have been jealous of those dance steps. So he didn't. I don't know if he will do it, or he'll drag it out. And as he drags it out, people are getting penalized. And they should get a moratorium on these penalties, because these guys have the ability to stop it, and they're not doing it. Again, through either indifference or ineptness. Should be done. Thanks.
Mr. Will Weber, our next speaker is Mr. Faber.
Harry Faber. I actually have good news for once as it pertains to civil rights. I am honored to be a part of the Lehigh Valley Emergency Response Network, and I am pleased to announce that we have officially launched our hotline on Monday, our ICE Rapid Response Hotline. The number is 610-850-9930. Now, the Emergency Response Network is a tool for education and communication. It is not the end goal, but it is a stepping stone towards working class liberation. And at first, I would also like to shame the prank callers. Since its launch, we've already received a number of prank callers, and we are not just here protecting our migrant community, but anybody who may be unjustly kidnapped by ICE or other federal agents, which is likely to come. And I would also like to shame the city government, because I'm sure that you were aware that this was occurring, and still no one from Bethlehem city government showed up to the training, nor the launch. I also would like to say how disheartening it is that any time I see a member of this administration or council outside of this room, they are only concerned with campaigns. The other day I saw Laura Collins at the joint, and I can't fully comment as to what she was working on, but I can say the only thing I did hear was her talking about Willie's campaign after the mayoral race. And for someone who is a lawyer of the city, I am deeply troubled for what I can only process as this city's lack of concern regarding the kidnappings that occurred at the 510 flats. The last meeting practically acted as if that did not occur. Also, to further address last meeting, I recognize the well-intended nature of city council president. For the most part, you may not believe me, I really try to recognize when everyone is well-intentioned, even when I couldn't possibly disagree more. However, we live in unprecedented times. I would argue it is out of touch with reality to ask anyone, especially the working class, to maintain any semblance of civility or decorum at these meetings when just about everyone knows the horrors going on as a direct result of the American government. After 647 days of taxpayer-funded live-stream genocide, after the construction of concentration camps on American soil already proven to be violating human rights, after the destruction of due process, after the repeal of Roe v. Wade, after the government has enabled and abetted the plundering and destruction of our environment, after quite literally everything going on with the Jeffrey Epstein case, after time and time again of being proven that this government is corrupt and protects the kingly lifestyle of the ruling class, I would ask, how the heck can anyone who has any sort of class consciousness or even the smallest thread of empathy be expected to maintain civility when every bit of suffering is ignored?
That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. That exhausts our list who had signed up, so I'll go around the room. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make a comment this evening? Sir?
Good evening, Mike Stopford, 909 Cayuga Street, Bethlehem. Before I get to what I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to commend and compliment our police department. I moved 9 times before I graduated from high school, so I lived in many different states and encountered, growing up, many different police departments and many different experiences. And most of them are very good, but I can say unequivocally, our city's of Bethlehem's police department is at another level. I'm not being paid to say this, and I'm not getting a get out of jail free card or anything like that, but it's sincere. So I think we need to really, these meetings typically a lot comes up here in the way of criticism or complaint, and sometimes well-founded, right? but I'm a big believer in giving compliments when they're due and deserved, and they're very deserved. And that's coming from a big context of seeing many different police departments, so we have truly one of the finest. So we should be grateful for that. So I'm going to just tell a story real quick. When I moved here 44 years ago, young 22-year-old kid from California, I had no intention of staying here. I met my wife. I've been here for about 40 years ever since. But I'll never forget, I had a job at Haldeman Ford over on Tillman Street up at the other end of Allentown. It was like my first or second week living here. I was living with my uncle and aunt at the time, and I had to drive all the way over to Easton to the courthouse for some type of a document. I was getting, you know, all my papers, driver's license switched over and everything, so I had to make the big long trek from Allentown all the way to Easton. And and this is not a knock against Allentown or Easton, but it's a compliment to Bethlehem. So I'm driving, and I'm going on Tillman Street, and I had this sense of city, metropolis, intense, you know, busy, busy city, right? And when I got to the curve where Tillman Street turns into Union Boulevard, into Bethlehem, I'll never forget, and I couldn't put my finger on it. It was an intangible thing, and I remember it to this day. But I remember this sense of, like, peace and calm. Like, wow, what just changed? That's strange, you know? And it dawned on me, I had just entered the Bethlehem city limits, right? And I remember driving down Union Boulevard, past Nitschman, you know, down through downtown Bethlehem, and it was just this feel. It was just like a different feel. It felt like a town, not like a city, right? And then I got over to, like, the Williams Township area where Easton Avenue turns into William Penn Highway, and started getting into the Easton area. And that feeling left me. And the city feeling came back. This intense, busy city feeling. Not a knock against them, but there was no doubt Bethlehem was different. It was just a different feel. And I'm sure many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Which brings me to my concern. This isn't a question, it's not a demand, this is just something to say, please think about this in the months going forward. I've heard comments sometimes to the effect of, we want everybody to enjoy this feeling we have in Bethlehem. I think I was at a city council meeting once where one of the people said, I don't want anybody to be denied living here who wants to live here. And I remember thinking, well, that's noble, and that sounds virtuous, but, like, you literally can't have everybody living here. Otherwise, Bethlehem loses its Bethlehemness, right? And I think we're at a crossroads. I really do. I think we're sitting at a precipice where we're going to develop and build every last open space we have to make room for every and anybody. And it sounds noble and it sounds great, but at what point is the feeling that we get when we come from Easton to Bethlehem to Allentown going to go away, and we're just another abstract, endless enigma of a metropolis? I don't want to see that happen. So I'm just asking you, in the months and years going forward, just keep in the back of your mind, you're the guardians of what makes Bethlehem Bethlehem.
Thank you, Mr. Stafford.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make a comment? Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire again. I had two other things I was thinking of talking about tonight, but I've got to follow what he just said. And he said it better than I've been trying to say it. There is something special about Bethlehem. That's the words I've been using. The character of Bethlehem, and we're in danger of losing it. And it's, well, let me say this. Some years ago, this organization called forget the name of it, but it was the Movers and Shakers of the Lehigh Valley, and they had a focus groups. And I remember I was in one focus group of about half a dozen people, and a young man was our moderator, and he said, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission is predicting that 50,000 people will move here in the next 20 years into the Lehigh Valley. And I raised my hand, I said, where is it written we have to make room for 50,000 more people? Not that I'm against people wanting to live here, that's a nice thing in a way. But Bethlehem right now is changing as we speak. Somebody who I respect has said that the south side is already gone. It's starting to happen to the west side and the north side. Not that we can't make room for some more people, in particular affordable housing, and that's another subject. We should use some vacant land that does exist to erect some housing that is not so expensive. Like, for example, the industrial park to the east of the south side, get some of that land back and build some decent housing that doesn't cost so much. But the bigger question is, are we going to retain what makes Bethlehem special? And he put his finger on it rather well. I've said in the past that Bethlehem is not a city, it's a town. But big enough to be interesting in almost every respect. And that is something special. There is a sense of calm, of relative peace. Yeah, we do have some aggressive drivers now. That's the immigration from New Jersey has done that. But on the whole, it's not too different from the city, the town that I grew up in. And there's something special about it. And we really ought to try hard to retain that special character. So that means we have to cast a lot of scrutiny on some of these changes that people want to bring. Another way of saying this is a good friend of mine who knows Philadelphia said that Bethlehem is in danger of becoming like North Philadelphia. She said that North Philadelphia was once a neighborhood full of ethnic neighborhoods, little neighborhoods all over the place. They're all gone. Now it's a sea of six-story apartment buildings. Sound familiar? Six-story apartment buildings? Five-story apartment buildings? They're coming. I recently had a long chat with Rocky. He's one of our better developers, actually. They call him Rocky because his last name is unpronounceable. He's an immigrant from Bulgaria, incidentally. And he and I have had several good talks. And he prides himself on taking properties that are in trouble and making something good from them. And that was his name, his goal with the Boyd Theater Apartments. but I told him straight out, Rocky, it's too big and too plain. Though it's a darn sight better than the original design. He fired the first architect, which it reminded me of Lower East Side 100 years ago. That was the original design. Anyway, I'm out of time again, but this is something that we need to focus on or we're going to lose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Was there anyone else in the White Center who wants to make a comment? Mr. Howell?
Stephen Italics, 737 Ridge. Webster defines the term protest as a solemn declaration of opinion and usually of dissent. A famous historical protest was the Boston Tea Party. a disguise as Native Americans was necessary. My local taxpayers, since the British government considered the protest an act of treason with possible death as a resulting penalty. An interesting aspect of the recent protests at city council meetings has been done by a majority of youthful elements of the community over the issue of human rights abuse internationally. Something new for Bethlehem. A very healthy sign for democracy's future depends on the positive involvement of its youth on public issues. Consequently, one would expect respect and encouragement by a senior element. To the contrary, it is actually city council itself who is acting as a negative force. The strife in the Middle East has provoked many local college students to use the grassroots level town meeting to voice their protests, extending the meeting time well beyond the normal limits. One council member suggested limiting one of the public comment section only to city business not being voted on for the topic of choice. A request which, in effect, would be muzzling the free speech of those youths whom they should be encouraging to be engaged on more public social matters. The human rights issue has come home to rest, for ICE managed to incarcerate 17 members of a working group in this city. Of all the local community officials responding to the issue, Bethlehem's response can best be described as lame to almost nothing. Although there's been excessive official verbiage at council meetings, a lot to do about nothing. You could rename the last city council meeting as honoring the film Silence of the Lambs.
Thank you, Mr. Antalik. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make a comment? Who's not had a chance? Anyone to the right? That concludes our public comment. For anything not being voted on, we didn't have anyone sign up for second public comment, which is any ordinance or resolution that we are voting on tonight. Is there anyone who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Seeing none, we'll continue on. Any old business from members of council? I'll move on to new business. Before I open it up to council, I will accept a motion and a second to reschedule the time of the city council meeting, our next one, which would be Tuesday, August 5th, 2025, to 5:30 p.m. instead of our typical 7 p.m. start time, and this is since the meeting occurs during the week of Music Fest.
So moved. Second.
So a motion by Councilwoman Kwiatek, second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. The motion passes. That's just a reminder to everyone, our next council meeting will start at 5:30 p.m. on August the 5th. Gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to take your conversation. Gentlemen.
I'm just listening.
I understand. If I could hear you, the room can hear you. Thank you. Understood. And then before I open it up to the rest of council for the agenda, because it came up earlier, our agenda is posted online by the clerk's office by the close of business on Fridays. So as it relates to something like the saldo and the 100 plus pages, Mr. Miller double checked while he was sitting here next to me, it is posted with all the city council documents online should anyone ever want to review them beforehand.
Hearings are also publicized, they're advertised in accordance with statutory requirements.
Thank you. Attorney Stewart, any new business from members of council? Mr. Gallagher?
Yeah, I just got a few things
Ms. Kennels, the Larkin Company had a presentation at the Parking Authority a few weeks ago, and they had said that they're doing 108 units in the white box that are 1 and 2 bedrooms, but the website says 122 units. You know what your number that is? Is it 122 or 108?
I'm not sure. What website are you talking about?
On the Larkin Company.
Oh, they posted about this particular project?
Yeah.
Oh.
It said 122 units.
I believe the most recent draft that they have was closer to 100.
100?
Yeah.
All right. Because they said the...
They haven't submitted their formal plans yet.
Okay.
Well, actually, I take that. I apologize. They do have plans, I think, that are in for the August 13th hard meeting is when they'll have their first public presentation. I don't recall offhand the exact number, but I think it's closer to the 100, 108 number than it is to the 122.
Yeah, thank you. All of you that commented today about the affordability and how beautiful it is, and everybody here feels the same way, I'm sure. And I agree with a lot of the statements everybody made tonight, but there's a catch-22, right? So yesterday, I don't know if anybody saw this in the morning call yesterday, a national study was done by Rent Cafe. And if you look at it, it's in the bottom page of the front page of the morning call. It's a very good article. And it said that the Lehigh Valley, the rental competitive index, the competitive index for the whole country, the Lehigh Valley score was 90.9 out of 100. The national average is 74.6. That's astronomical. We are the second most popular or competitive rental market in the United States. It's said on there that for every one unit that goes up for rent, there's 14 people trying to get that one rental unit in the city of Bethel. That's astronomical. And it's a problem, because if we don't build, what happens? Supply and demand. The supply stays the same, the demand keeps going up and up and up. The higher the demand, the higher the price, selling price, and the rental prices. And that's what's happened, because we haven't had, I mean, we think we've had a lot of development and apartments built in the city. We really haven't. Nothing near what we need to keep up with the demand of the people that want to live here. Just like we all want to live here, we think it's a beautiful place. There's thousands of people who come to Music Fest and come to our festivals and say, man, you know, I live on Main Street, right across from Brewers in those condos. And I'm out there and people walk, whenever I'm outside doing yard work, I was just putting plants out there the other day. I know it's hard to believe that I would be putting plants out in front of my little place, but you know, I got a green thumb. And people, every time I'm out there, people are like, hey, what are these units going for? And they're shocked when I tell them. They weren't that expensive when I bought it. But it's the price, and they don't even go on the market anymore. They're all private sales, mostly. And I say this because we either build more units to try to alleviate the supply issue, which should bring things down a little bit, or we don't build more units and things get more astronomically expensive. My son owns two rental units, two half doubles. He bought them probably about maybe 7 years ago for $150,000. He fixed them up. I was looking at comps the other day in that area, $380,000 for a half of a double. It's ridiculous. And that's a starter home. 380, same comps, same house. And I guarantee you, a couple of them aren't even as nice inside as his because he remodeled them. And that's one of the issues. A lot of people want to live here. And so they find a home that's beat up, what we might think is a $200,000 home, or $250,000 would be nice for a starter home for someone. People that want to really live here, who want to move here that are getting older are buying these units, putting $20,000-$40,000 in them, gutting them, and making all brand new kitchens, all brand new bathrooms, and either reselling them or keeping them and renting them out for astronomical rates. That's what's going on in the city. It's just not in the south side. I grew up in West Bethlehem over in Cayman Avenue area. Those homes there were, I mean, they were like lower middle class housing. And the price of those units over there are getting at a price that I can't even believe. My dad would roll over in his grave right now if he knew the price he could get for the house that we grew up in. But so it's a dilemma, it really is. And it's something that, it's a catch-22, and we're damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't, because if we start building a lot of units, people are going to be upset at that. So if we don't, it's just going to increase that intensity. It's kind of like, I tell people, and I'm not being mean when I say this, but some people say, Bethlehem's getting too expensive to live here. I said, I know it is. Not just for me, but for everybody. Every time we raise taxes, it becomes more expensive to live here. Every time we add, I don't know which gentleman brought up the new requirements in Saldo. I think it was Mr. O'Hare. Was that you? About the new greenery, things that that's in Saldo. Every time we add things and make it more expensive to a builder, or a developer, or someone that buys a house and is going to rent it, every time we increase their costs. Those costs are getting added on to the renter. I have a rental unit, a three unit, on Linden Street. Every time I get inspected, I have no problem with it. I put some plumbing in, I had to do this, I did that, but I don't eat that cost. I'm not gonna eat it. I have to add that on to the rental. So when the lease is up at the end of the year, I increase the rent. And that's what everybody does. I don't wanna lose money. I'm a retired school teacher. So I bought that as investment property 20 years ago, and I don't want to lose money on it. I'm trying to create a nest egg for my kids for when I pass. So I'm not trying to lose money on it. I'm trying to just stay afloat and stay ahead of the bills. And that's what a lot of people in the city are doing. So, I mean, it's a really tough situation, and I'm not sure anybody up here has the answer, and I'm sure none of you have the exact answer to do. Because if we build more and more and more, people are going to be upset. If we build higher, 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 people are going to get upset. But if we don't build, there's a lot of people in the city who are not going to be able to afford to live here anymore. Unfortunately, this is my opinion. I think the South Side rents in the next 10 years are going to be so astronomical. A large portion of the people cannot live there anymore in 10 years, 10, 15 years. That's just my opinion. Because what you're seeing over there is a vibrant area of restaurants, shops. It's becoming a younger neighborhood. I hate to say this, it's becoming a little bit more gentrified because things are getting so nice over there. And I fear that a lot of people who've been living over there, if they don't own a home, and they're renting, are going to be priced out of the market in the next 10 to 15 years. That's my belief, which I hope does not happen. So I just say this because, everybody's in agreement that keeping Bethlehem a beautiful place to live. Everybody. Keep our taxes low, keeping our city, our parks nice, the roads nice and paved, our schools great. But the nicer we make it, the more people that want to live here. I can't afford to live in Manhattan. I would love to live on, the Central Park South. I can't afford to live there. Everybody would love to live there, right? But I can't. So I have to live somewhere else. And I think that's what's going to happen in the city of Bethlehem. There's going to be a lot of people who live here now that can't afford to live here. Are going to have to probably move to a less expensive place where there's lower rents, like Catasauqua or Northampton or I don't know. But Bethlehem's going to be a very expensive city to live in the next 10, 15 years, no matter what we do, I think. And I just wanted to thank all of you for speaking tonight because, when we started talking about these issues, it's a complicated thing.
But we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Wilhelm?
Just because I see Ms. Toulouse is still here, I just wanted to congratulate you on the Rose Garden Market. I have seen it grow over the years. I really feel it is an ideal spot for such a market, and been pleased to see increased vendors. I'm friendly with some of the vendors there and know that your communication has been appreciated in the ways in which you have worked to grow the market. So I'm glad to hear that the vendor process is being made more streamlined. I appreciate your work with local nonprofits as well. You represent. Please pass it on then.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Leo?
Mr. Will Weber brought up some really good points that I would love to talk about, but not right this moment, because I want to look into this Aquahawk and stuff like that. But I did want to turn to Mr. Boscola and thank you and your department publicly for helping the business owner over in South Bethlehem. He called me quite agitated about what could be the cost. And the city came out and was there as UGI was doing their work, kind of assessed the situation. And Toby was very helpful in helping that business owner walk through that process. And the city supported that business owner, really made it so that he wasn't going to incur a cost that he can't incur. So, you know, I know that the residential aspect is something we should all talk about as a council, but I once again want to thank you and your department for their professionalism and their whenever it's something that we can do, standing up for the business owners and making sure that they're able to continue doing business when they're on these tight budgets, not incurring additional costs. So just once again, thank you and your department, and if you can pass my appreciation on to Toby as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business? We will continue on with the agenda. Mr. Miller, Communication 6C.
The June 26, 2025 Memorandum and Proposed Resolution from Police Chief Michelle Cott regarding special event parking during Music Fest 2025. The time period will be from 12 p.m. on Friday, August 1st, through 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, August 10th. North side and south side provisions are provided and are detailed on a map that is attached as an exhibit.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda tonight. 6D.
A July 9th, 2025 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spark Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center, and sub-permittee is Arts Quest. The activity is the 2025 Lehigh Valley Pride Festival. It will take place from 2 to 7 p.m. on August 17th. Permit duration will be 9 a.m. until midnight on the same date. Premises will be First Street from Polk Street to the Eastern Terminus and Founders Way between First and Second Streets.
Resolution 10D is also on the agenda. 6E.
A July 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Ms. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for an emergency solutions grant for up to $1.5 million from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development on behalf of Lehigh Valley's homeless service providers who are represented by the Lehigh Valley Regional Homeless Advisory Board. The city would serve as a pass-through for this money, which may be used for activities such as rapid rehousing, homeless prevention, and emergency sheltering.
And Resolution 10E is on the agenda. 6F.
A July 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Ms. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant through the Multimodal Transportation Fund, ranging from $100,000 to $3 million from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. The request includes funds to improve the sidewalks on Getter Street, repair the roadway, and update the ADA ramps.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda tonight. 6G.
A July 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from City Solicitor John F. Spark Jr. The memorandum recommends a non-exclusive video sharing license agreement with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. The agreement would allow the Department of Transportation to share video and images from its traffic cameras with the city under specified terms and conditions.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. 6H.
A July 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development. seeking authorization to submit the 2025 annual action plan / five-year consolidated plan and propose CDBG and home allocations to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. These documents were reviewed during the June 3rd public hearing held by DCED and a July 1st public hearing before City Council.
And that resolution 10B is on the agenda this evening. Moving on to reports, I don't have anything to report tonight. Anyone from the administration? Mr. Evans is saying no. Thank you, Mr. Evans. We'll turn to our acting Finance Committee Chair, Councilwoman Kwiatkowska.
The Finance Committee met earlier tonight at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. There were six budget adjustments on the agenda. The Finance Committee voted to advance all six ordinances involving budget adjustments to Council tonight for first reading. Hillary Kwiatek, Acting Chair of Finance Committee.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We don't have any ordinances for final passage tonight, so we'll move on to new ordinances. Mr. Miller, 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2025 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 33, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion?
I believe this is, right, this is one of the things that we voted on tonight, and so I just wanted to mention that the money came from, yeah, the local share grants from Northampton and Monroe counties, and they are being moved into a revenue, you know, a line, a budget line, so that it can be used for the Gateway of Fourth development, the affordable housing development.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? Councilwoman Leo?
I will also point out, since we've had conversations about affordable housing this evening, there's very few remedies for affordable housing that we have at the municipal level. So much of the stuff is dictated by the state. We can't do rent control. There's so much that we can't do. But what we can do are projects like these that give actual affordable housing to a community, to Councilman Callahan's point, that has really bared the brunt of development. I genuinely believe you can study the housing crisis in the United States by studying South Bethlehem, but projects like this are what we have within our arsenal to really move the needle when it comes to affordable housing.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 6-0. 9B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2025 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 34, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Councilwoman?
Again, and I'm glad that Ms. Lewis is here for this, because this is $50,000 that's going for Rose Garden improvements. It was a grant, and I can say that it's going to be used for upgrading lighting, litter receptacles, asphalt pathways, and I forget what the other things were, but I thought the upgrading the lighting and the litter receptacles in particular were good news that I wanted to make sure that you heard.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Passed 6-0. 9C.
The ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 35, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Councilwoman?
Hi again. So this is actually just a money move, and you'll see in 9E, I believe, the other side of it. It's really just to move money from the general fund into a HUD budget line.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 9D.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund for 2025. Bill number 36, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion, Councilwoman Kwiatek.
So this is really interesting. You all might be interested in this. We have to have a certified sewer inspector on staff and for inspecting and being there on site when septic tank work is being done. which is very rare in our city, but the person who had that certification left, so we're just sort of between that time and training someone else in the department, so we're just outsourcing the septic tank inspection work.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
That might be interesting to somebody.
It's all interesting. Call the roll, Mr.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 9E.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Community Development Block Grant Budget for 2025. Bill number 37, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. And final ordinance, 9F.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Community Development Block Grant Budget for 2025. Bill number 38, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion?
I do want to mention about this one, that this is coming about as a result of funds that were allocated to the Friendship Park project, and the Friendship Park project actually came in under bid, so we're able to reuse those funds for other purposes.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Moving on to resolutions, 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, in accordance with the Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the disposal of public records in the Financial Services Department as set forth in Exhibit A. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City's Program Year 2025 CDBG Annual Action Plan and its Home Investment Partnerships Program Annual Action Plan and 2025 through 2029 5-Year Consolidated Plan Action Plan are hereby approved for submission to HUD by the Mayor along with required assurances and certifications. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that during the period 12 noon Friday, August 1st, 2025 through 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, August 10th, 2025 and in connection with 2025 Music Festival, all violations of provisions of Article 531 parking generally, and the subsection specified in the resolution shall carry the modified fines as specified in the resolution. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center for the 2025 Lehigh Valley Pride Festival. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for an emergency solutions grant through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development for the prevention of homelessness and related activities. And be it further resolved that the Mayor is authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a grant through the Multimodal Transportation Fund through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development to improve the sidewalks on Getter Street and update the ADA ramps. Be it further resolved that the mayor is authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Ms. Leone.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. It passes 6-0. And lastly, 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to grant a limited, non-exclusive, non-transferable, revocable license to the city to use video imagery from its traffic cameras. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Council?
Could I just have a little bit more information about this? Like, is this an existing agreement that we're continuing? What is the purpose? Like, what depth of sharing? How far does it go, et cetera?
Absolutely. So this is a new agreement. Similar to the traffic footage that news media such as WFMZ utilize, and some of the bigger news outlets down in Philadelphia, they have cameras. They have a camera agreement with PennDOT to view the cameras that are on like 76, the Schuylkill Expressway. This will enable us to view only the cameras that are in place that are owned by PennDOT on Route 378. So it's not used for enforcement. It's just a means similar to the news media of being able to bring up that camera and check the traffic conditions. Or okay. If there's an accident, it could be utilized for investigative purposes.
Okay, but it wouldn't be used or couldn't be used for like surveillance followed by enforcement. It would be potentially used to look back on something to investigate, but not as
correct.
Like proactive surveillance.
Correct. And we do not control, it should be in the agreement, we do not control the cameras. That's completely up to PennDOT, what direction they're facing, they're panning, they're tilting, they're zooming, all that good stuff PennDOT handles. We're merely just able to see that camera footage.
Okay. And is this one camera presently? I realize they could add or change or whatever, but is it just one right now?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Maybe two, northbound and southbound. I misspoke. I apologize.
Got it. But and right around the bridge there?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion?
I have a quick question.
Councilman?
And just so I have it straight in my head, we're using their camera, like their cameras. They're not using any of our equipment, tapping into any of our databases or anything like that.
Correct.
It's just us using their info.
Correct. This is just a one-way share. Their camera system, we're able to view the footage. They don't have access to any of our cameras.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? Thank you, Chief.
You're welcome.
Mr. Miller, call the roll, please.
Ms. Leone.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 6-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safe, everyone, and have a safe music fest. Meeting is adjourned.
I don't.